When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everybody, I am Lucia Matuonto and welcome to the Relatable Voice podcast, a talk show where my guests and I talk about relatable everyday situations, books, and the environment we live in. Remember to subscribe and follow the podcast on social media so you can be notified when a new episode is available. Let's begin. Today we are headed to Los Angeles to chat with Nzondi, also known as Ace Antonio Hall. Nzondi is a talented American science fiction horror author, singer, songwriter, and recording artist. He made story as the first African American to win a Bram Stoker Award for his young adult book, The Owari Mosaic. Nzondi, welcome to the RV.
Lucia, thank you for having me. Bueno.
Such a pleasure. You're so talented. I said, wow, I don't even know what I'm going to ask him because I have so many questions.
I'm an open book, whatever you want to ask me.
Sounds great. Your full name is Asimantis Nzondi Hall. So can you tell us about the origin or significance of your name?
Yeah, I have to definitely pay homage to my father, rest in peace, Dad. He named me after an African king of Kemet when Kemet was a rich country. And it was King Asimandisi who laid down the stellar systems for the first calendar. Yeah. So, and Nzondi is also an African name from the region of Ghana.
And you are originally from New York.
New York, baby. That's right. Native New Yorker. My mother was working as a nurse in Elmhurst Hospital. That's where I was born while we were living in Brooklyn in the Bushwick area, Bushwick Projects.
Actually, my daughter is living in Brooklyn now.
Oh, I love that. See, a little connection there.
Yeah,
I love that.
I plan to visit her in June, and I was reading about Brooklyn, and it's surprising to think that in the 80s and 90s, rents were much lower, and now she was complaining about how expensive the rent is, and I said, it's not only there, it's all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. New York and LA are just astronomical when it comes to cost of living and rent. Well, New York more so cost of living, but rent, definitely LA and New York is just, sky high. Can I say that how excited I am to be on your program? I mean, you got like a billion downloads. I mean, you have so many. It's just an amazing, popular program. I'm really excited to be here. I'm really excited to meet you. You're very, you just have a very wonderful, and your Zoe the Crab series, Let's Talk, because I love what I've seen so far from that series. And I have an executive producer who's interested in producing a children's book and a children's film based on my father's character, Little Zing. And Little Zing was the first Black superhero that was published 3 years before Black Panther. So maybe we can talk and collaborate. That would be great. That would be awesome.
Don't tell me that. I'm here. I'm ready. Ready. Yeah, Zoe the Crab was a complete success. Thankfully, I was able to publish 3 books. So creativity runs in your blood. Can you tell me how and what led you to transition from a successful career as a teacher to becoming a novelist, a successful novelist?
You know, in a lot of families, I believe the that old saying that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree is really true in a lot of families. If the family is heavy in a certain area or a certain industry. And my father was definitely an entertainer, a painter. He created one of the a couple of jazz classics. He wrote the lyrics to So What, the Miles Davis jazz classic sung by Eddie Jefferson. And he's a painter. Some I visited an art studio a couple of years ago, and the owner of the art studio, the curator, said that my father's painting of Hannibal in the Anheuser-Busch Kings of Africa series was in his mother's house, and he had just seen it right before he came to the studio. So, you know, my father's creativity as a poet, as an activist, as a writer, I think he kind of really, he didn't really teach me anything. He just would do it on a almost a 24-hour basis. You'd see him in the kitchen painting or working on something, playing jazz music. And when you're around that so much, I guess it kind of oozes out. Maybe through osmosis, maybe through, you know, just the connection of seeing them all the time. And then my sister also was a singer, and she was in a blaxploitation movie called Velvet Smooth. And just growing up around that, you know, and you just can't help, I think, but be inspired by that and the things that they exposed me to, all the movies, all the horror movies, all the, you know, the musicals, you know, from the Nicholas Brothers to, you know, Fred Astaire to Elvis, you know, all of that stuff that we experienced together, it just really created this love and appreciation for the arts. And so when I turned 18, 19 years old, that's when I started delving into music and hip hop and dance and exploring those realms until I kind of developed something. And I always wanted to be a rock star, which is the name of one of my songs, Teenage Rockstar. Featuring Federal Star from Onyx. And I always wanted to be a rock star. My grandmother was like, boy, you need to teach, you know. And she was a teacher. I grew up with my grandmother, and she was a teacher for like 44 years until she retired. And I think she retired in her 90s or something like that. And you know, I eventually kind of got into teaching. It was a steady, you know, steady income, steady job, and became certified and became a director of education in New York and in LA for the Sylvan Learning Center. But there was always this void in my heart. Like it was, I wanted to create. And finally I got the courage to quit my nearly six-figure job and start from scratch and learn how to write. And that was in, I want to say 2006, 2006. And I wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote, and it took me many, many years, but I got there. So yeah, I think creativity, it kind of just, you know, kind of just spanned over a couple of generations and it got to me.
You are courageous. I need to tell you. Yeah, wonderful. Can you give us a glimpse into the Owari mosaic?
You know, when I wrote the book, I kind of wanted to do something like I grew up loving this TV show called Quincy, Medical Examiner, starring Jack Klugman. I love the combination of a forensic pathologist solving crimes. And I always had in the back of my mind that kind of a story. And that's basically the type of book that Owari Mosaic is. You know, of course, being the ace of horror, you know, I had to include the horror element to it. And I love sci-fi so much, and I included the sci-fi horror element. And being a teacher for 13 years, all of my books have, and that's also inspired by like my inspiration for Steven Spielberg and Stephen King, always have a children or a child protagonist, whether it's a child or a teenager. So my book is basically about a teenage girl who studied forensic pathology through a video game. Now, in my the world that I built, my universe, it's not the multiverse. And things don't happen on what do you call it, online. It happens in the neuroverse because they have brain implants or neural implants. So they actually play their games in their mind. They can go to school in their mind, you know, and they do a lot of stuff. So this is a game in my book where my character has played since she was little. She didn't know it at the time that it was a well, I won't, that's a spoiler, but I won't tell that part. But it's a game that she played in her head, and it actually teaches her how, you know, step by step, how to solve crimes using forensics. And she can actually solve cold cases, real cold cases. So the police actually put this game out here for students to solve real cold cases. And in the process, you know, they're able to do virtual autopsies and the whole thing and just learn how to be, you know, a forensic pathologist. Anyway, that's the game that taught her that. And she wants to be one, but she's too young. And, you know, when she goes to the medical examiner's office to apply for a job, they laugh at her and say, look, you know, come back to us when you have a degree or something like that, you know, and when you're a little older. But she's still able to solve these cases in the game. So one night when she's coming home from a party, as kids do, you know, with her friends, she hits something and she gets out the car. She's driving her brother's car. She gets out the car and she finds out that what she hit was a little girl. And she doesn't know what to do. She's losing it. She calls her brother, who's a cop, and her brother comes to the rescue and actually covers up, because her brother knows that if this ever gets out, her whole career being a pathologist is over, you know. So he covers the crime up. And next thing she knows, she sees her next door neighbors crying and comes to find out that the girl that was dead, that, you know, she found in her car that she thinks she hit, was, you know, the next door neighbor's daughter. You know, it's one of those towns where the neighbors aren't really, a lot of neighborhoods, they don't know their next door neighbors. It's one of those neighborhoods. And she sees a cop that has been away from home for a while, kind of interviewing them, and comes to find out that cop, right, is her in-game partner. You know, like on games, you don't really know who the person is because they have these tag names. It's her in-game partner. So she actually starts investigating the crime with her in-game partner, but her in-game partner doesn't know it was her who killed her sister, or supposedly killed her sister. So the mystery unravels, and it won, you know, a Bram Stoker. People love the book, and really surprised and honored. And it's a great book. I can read something from it if you want me to, a little bit, if we have time.
Yes, please, please. Of course, please read something for us.
Yes?
Yes, of course.
Hey, okay. Let me find something. Here. Chapter 4 of A War in Mosaic. All right, a couple of minutes here. I deactivated the virtual sensory game in my neural implant with focused thought, and open my eyes just in time to see my favorite mug bounce off of my lap and break. An empty coffee mug with Gamer Girls Do It Better printed on it had shattered into a million pieces on the hardwood floor in my bedroom. I was no longer Zoe. Her name, the character's name, is Feeny Zoe, XO. I was no longer Zoe, an investigating medical examiner, like I was in the neuro game, House of Awari. I was a 17-year-old Feeny Zoe living a boring life in the city of Kumasi. My vision came into a hazy focus on my brother's faded T-shirt that said, "Join the Ghana Allied Forces, the GAF. "You idiot," I said. "That was my favorite mug, Kofi. How did you even get in my room?" Kofi's large, dark brown eyes widened and his mouth fell agape. His haircut was as fresh as the GAF demanded, but his face was shiny with perspiration. We were both the same age, but he had me by a few months. His eyes narrowed, and a crooked grin twisted his lips. "Well, next time you won't pretend to ignore me when I'm calling you," he said. "You weren't really meditating. Your eyes were moving around in your eyelids too much. You can't fool me." "Ugh," I said, scoffing and leaping to my feet. "Aren't you supposed to be doing police work or something? How'd you get in at such an early age anyway?" "Grunt forged my paperwork," he pointed at my head. "Is that horse hair or Indian hair?" I was about to pop him good in his eye when Auntie Yasna poked her head in my bedroom. "What in the world is going on here?" she asked. After dodging in and out of foster homes and living on the streets for almost a year, Auntie Yasna took me in and treated me like her own daughter. She, Kofi, and the twins were the only real family I'd ever known since my parents died when I was young. "Kofi broke my gamer mug," I said, trying to get at him. Auntie Yasna stood between us And even if I tried, I couldn't get around her. She was a hefty woman and had the height to match her size. Kofi stood behind her and chuckled, making me more annoyed at him. I didn't mean to break it, he said. It was an accident. I reached my arm past Auntie Yaz and tried to grasp Kofi's shoulder. Liar! Auntie Yaz stepped forward. Her buxom bosom pushed me backward into a small stumble. Now, Feeny, I told you about that temper of yours. Get the boy a break. You know Kofi can get about as confused as flatulence in a fan factory. If the boy says he made a mistake, you better believe he's well capable of doing just that. That made me laugh and I shook my head. You got that right. Hey, Kofi said, what is this? Gang up on Kofi Day? Auntie Yazda grabbed me and stood by my side, hugging me. More like Women Unite Day. You better recognize. Feeny is not a woman, he said. Boy, just go on downstairs and make sure the twins are ready. I want to get in the rationing line before it grows longer than a politician's nose during election time. I can't afford to be late to work, and now you can't take me to work. I'm going to be on crunch time from now on. Kofi crossed his arms and leaned against the doorframe. I'm busting my butt on the force, so you don't have to work, Mom. He beat his fist against his chest. I'm the man of the family. Boy, if you don't do what I tell you to do, your station is going to have to put an APB on your BUTT because I'm going to bop you so hard you'll be missing for days. Now go check on the twins and make sure they ain't up to no good before you go to work. And while you're at it, I said, do some push-ups. Your chest sounded mighty flat when you beat on it just now. At least my hair is real, he said. Boy, Auntie Yasna said, failing to hold in a chuckle. Get going before I tan your 17-year-old hide. You're not too big to still get a whooping. Kofi sighed. Okay, Mom, I'm going. He left mumbling. I don't know why you don't make Feeny get them ready. I have to go to work. Because a man needs to learn how to take care of children the same way a woman does and still work as hard as a mother does to be a good father. I laughed. He doesn't even have a girlfriend and you teach him how to be a father. Look who's talking, Kofi said. Watch your mouth, Auntie Yazda raised her hand to him and he ran off. When he left, Auntie Yazda helped me, almost done, pick up the pieces of my mug. You were meditating, huh? She asked. Yeah. Well, I guess that means you're feeling better. I didn't know why, but I hadn't told her about the game. Part of the reason was, that I knew that no one else had a virtual construct in their neural implants. I asked around, went online and even searched the archive streaming database. There was no such game, no such name as the House of Awari, which is funny. As long as I can remember, I played the game that only Lamp and I seemed to know. Lamp was her best friend in the game. Only Lamp and I seemed to know, seemed to own on our neural implants. It was an escape. But more than that, it taught me all about pathology. One day I knew I'd be in real life. You're young, Auntie Yasna said. Why do you meditate? She picked up a tin garbage can from beside my reading desk. She stopped to look at some of my books. Clone Forensics by Kwesi Nzinga, Transferring Consciousness onto Retcons by Amar Selassie, and Soul Sleep by Muhammad Kwasi, among other books on pathology and science. She nodded her head, almost done, in a slow, thoughtful motion. You're too young to be so wise. I want to do big things, Auntie. I want to make a difference in this world. Child, you are doing big things, she said and tossed the broken pieces in my tin garbage can. You don't understand. That's not what I mean. Don't be silly. Helping me with the twins, keeping the place clean, is a big help to me, a tremendous help. I don't know what I'd do without you. There's nothing more important than family, and you help keep this one together. Good families are what make a difference in the world. Many folks grow up in dysfunctional ones. Now, go on and get ready. It's almost time to go get food rations. You know I like to be the first one in line. Okay, I'll be ready in just a few minutes. Hurry up, child, she said, and left my room. Last paragraph. That made me feel good, hearing her say that I was a big help to her. None of my foster parents ever expressed love for me. But it also made me sad because Auntie Yaza truly didn't understand that black hole that was eating up my very soul. There had to be more to life. There had to be. I glanced in the mirror, and instead of my face, all I saw was that dead girl under my car. If I didn't kill her, who did?
Wonderful. As I could see, this story explores themes of guilt, deception, and How did you approach like incorporating these complex themes into the narrative? Actually, you need to do an audiobook being the voice actor.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Really, thank you. I think just growing up around a lot of women, there weren't a lot of men in my family. My brother went off to he was in the military for 22 years, so pretty much, and when I was a young age, my grandfather and grandmother came to pick me up because my mother was taking three buses a day, working many hours, and my dad was working at the time at Terry Toons drawing Mighty Mouse. And there was no one to babysit for me. And so my grandparents came and got me and took me to Jacksonville when I was about 4 years old, 5 years old. And my grandfather died kind of early. And so it was my grandmother and my female cousin, who's kind of like my sister, Michelle Fields. And, just a lot of women in my family, all my aunts, and just a lot of women in my family. And I think by being exposed to all of those women and just seeing the strength in them and how they took care of the family. My grandmother took me when she was 70 years old. She took me in when she was 70. So seeing that kind of strength, I think, is just aiding me. And I always want to be a champion for, women and women independence, and also a champion for students, and because there's so much. There are so many obstacles in life and so many distractions, especially now. Oh my God. And I just, there's so much potential that children have if they could just only have, someone to champion them and push them, to stay focused. So all of my books have some kind of theme, something like that, that's innate in my heart. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, your energy is just amazing. You were reading, and I was like, wow, I feel so honored to be interviewing you. Yes. And
Thank
I love when you say, I was put on this earth to be a storyteller. So, how has your multicultural upbringing influenced your storytelling approach?
I think, like a lot of things, some things you're just born with, When I was in college at CW Post Long Island University, and I was taking up film studies and screenwriting, film directing and screenwriting. I remember the head of the department, Norman Sider, when he had an interview with me, and he was asking me about certain things, and I was telling him that when I'm writing, I can see it. Like, I can actually see it, I can smell it, I can see the colors. He was like, most people don't see it like that. So visceral. He said, most people can't see that. And I said, what? I just thought everyone could see it like that. So, I think everyone has these little, things and nuances about them, that make them that only they can do, and if they tapped into that, that's part of their purpose. And so, I'm lucky that I found that before, I did another 40 years of teaching, which I loved helping students, but I don't think that's what I was meant to do. Not at least not on that level. I think if I'm teaching, it was on the level of being a storyteller, or being, as they say in Africa, being a griot, griot. A griot is African storyteller. So I think I was meant to be that.
And would you like to leave a message for our listeners today?
Yes, go online right now and get Lucia's book called
So with the crab.
Zoe Crab. I'm glad I didn't say it. They call it Koa, which is Hawaiian. Zoe the Crab. Go get Zoe the Crab. It's
Thank
three,
you.
a wonderful series. Download, check out our podcast. She is the new superstar, the up-and-coming superstar podcasts. It's a very popular podcast, and I'm just very happy to be on it. And I think in this world, I really and truly believe on a more existential level that we are here to find a reason for our purpose, and to differentiate between, to not be so hard on ourselves when we make mistakes, to forgive ourselves, but to stay focused. And on the last note, I would say this for all of those people who are striving to be the best, because not everyone is striving to be the best. They just want to do what they do. But for those who are striving to be the best, I always give a, I want you to picture what Michelangelo had to do to paint the Sistine Chapel. He had to be insane for his purpose, for his passion. And when you're insane for your purpose and your passion, you go way beyond the boundaries of what everyone else would do for your craft. You study your craft. You read hundreds and hundreds. If you're a writer, you read hundreds and hundreds of books on a consistent basis. I always say, I read to inhale, I write to exhale. Together, I breathe life into story. And so, you know, you have to be insane for the passion, meaning you just go extra, 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 extra hard when everybody else will quit. You keep going. It means a lot of sacrifice, but the sacrifice, if you want to be, you know, if you don't want to just saturate the industry, but you really want to be an outlier of the industry, that's what you have to focus on and put in your mind. So, yeah. And it also takes technical and organized structural workshops and classes. You can't just do it on your own. It's a combination of all of that.
Yeah.
So.
And lastly, can you share with our listeners any exciting projects or, let's say, collaborations we can expect from you in the future?
Okay, so a couple of things. I can't really talk about who yet, but one of the pioneers of techno music. So I do music as well. I just started doing music this past year. I did it years and years ago. I did like 20 years worth of music, and I realized that wasn't, I didn't master it. I didn't have the magic in it. You know, that's when I went back to school teaching. But now that I've written a lot, you know, I kind of had an idea and got back to music. Anyway, I sent a song. I do rock music, basically black dude doing rock music. And I do rock, heavy metal and punk mostly. But I did have some dance tracks that I did. And I was going to do a dance kind of remix album. And I sent a track to a friend of mine who I worked with a long time ago, who's a pioneer. He's an icon in dance music. And I said, hey, man, this will be a great song to put on your label. You know, come on, put it on your label. Come on, buddy. And he's like, you know, I said, what are your thoughts? He said, you know what my thoughts are? My thoughts are I would love to do this with my group and put it out on our next album. I'm like, okay. So they're working on it now, and it's going to come on their next album. And I'm really, really excited because he's on a way, you know, he's an iconic, legendary dance guy. So if it comes out, you know, that has a way better chance of doing, you know, great than if it came out on me. So that, you know, I'm looking forward to. And a couple of weeks ago, I filmed with the Discovery Channel on a show they have called Exposed Naked Crimes. I actually saw a naked crime 4 years ago in 2019, when the naked burglar got stuck in a chimney across the street from where we lived. And I videotaped everything. And, you know, I was the first person to call 911. And so this TV show, they're in their second series, the second season on the Discovery Channel called Exposed Naked Crimes, you know, interviewed me. They wanted to put me on the show. So that's kind of cool. I don't know when it's coming out, but it's in their second season. That's cool. And I have a meeting tomorrow with an executive producer, Hollywood executive producer, who wants to make a TV series out of my book, A Warrior Mosaic, the one I just read from. And I have a meeting with him. We've had several meetings over the years. So we're in pre-development of it. And he wants to do a movie on my father's life, who was one of the founders of the Black is Beautiful movement with an organization called AJAZZ. There's a documentary going out, a multi-award-winning documentary, even won the Cannes World Festival, moving around and going out, about my father and his group AJAZZ. And so it's getting a lot of buzz. And so we have a meeting tomorrow. I think we have a financial backer who wants to put some money behind hiring a writer to write. That's a film, to write the movie for it. And it's, when it come out, baby, when I tell you, if it comes out and we get this thing greenlit, it's going to be a big, big, big thing. Because they interact with a lot of.
I will go back to LA to interview you again. Don't forget that.
Come on. So those are, I know I'm long-winded, but those are some of the projects that are, you know, some news that's coming out pretty soon. Some things that, some projects that'll be coming out pretty soon.
I know that one of your songs is called Teenage Rocks. Is that correct?
Teenage rock star.
Teenage rock star. And can we find it on Spotify? Please tell us, how can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Spotify under my real middle name, Nzondi, on Spotify. And it, you know, that song features Dave Moreno, who plays for, he plays the drums for Puddle of Mudd. So I got this super rock star drummer playing the drums on that track, on Teenage Rockstar. And also features Fredro Starr, who used to be Brandy's boyfriend in the TV show Moesha. And he's also part of the iconic, legendary hip-hop group Onyx. You know, slam, do-do-do, let boys be boys. So he's on that track and on Teenage Rockstar. So it's a cool track. And I'm actually doing a new version of it. I'll be recording next month. And I'll be releasing in a new album coming out probably early 2025. So
I will be following you as soon as we end this interview. And where can we find your book?
Yeah, Owari Mosaic is at anywhere books are sold. It's on Amazon. I just got picked up. It was first published by Omnium Gatherum Media, but Crossroad Press has now picked it up and has reprinted it. And it's out now with Crossroad Press, which is a really phenomenal publisher. And you go to Amazon and you'll find it, Owari Mosaic. And I actually had a book come out after that called Lipstick Asylum, which is doing pretty well. And I'm in the midst of finishing my new book, which will be part of that same universe. And it's called New Year's Dead. So I'm looking forward, and it's part of a new series of I don't want to tell too much, but a new series of characters that I've developed. So yeah, all you have to do is Google Nzondi, and you should be able to find my music and my books.
Out of curiosity, do you have free time?
I do have free time, and I spent it right before this interview doing a 6-mile run. That was free time.
Wonderful. Do you have social media?
I have the main one, I think it's called Nzondi Official. Or you can just, when you go on Instagram, I think if you just put in Ace Antonio Hall, which is my stage name, before I actually embraced my African heritage and used my real middle name instead of Ace. But if you put Ace Antonio Hall on Instagram, I think it'll come up and you'll see my logo, my crest logo, my Nzondi crest logo. And I have Nzondi Music and Nzondi Official on Instagram.
I'll be putting on the remarks so everybody will be able to find you.
Love it.
And again, thank you. And I hope I can see you again.
All right. Safe travels to LA.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe, so you'll be notified when the next one is posted. Please rate this podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you for listening, and remember, relationships don't exist. Relating does. Until next time.